Today is Thursday, May 21st. What to know today about a worldwide spike in COVID-19 cases, what the CDC now says about the virus living on surfaces, and there's a new battle over mail-in ballots, plus how airlines are stepping up safety protocols, and what's behind a baby bust, meaning fewer babies are being born. Then hang out after the news for Thing to Know Thursday's bonus interview about the new contact tracing tech that could end up on your smartphone. Welcome, welcome to The Newsworthy. All the day's news in less than 10 minutes. Fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. Thanks so much for being here. You ready? Let's do this. Well, the number of new COVID-19 patients reported on one day this week was more than any other day since the start of this pandemic. The World Health Organization said within 24 hours, there were 106,000 new infections reported around the world. And experts think the real number is probably much higher since there are testing shortages, unreported cases, and suspicions that some governments are purposely hiding the scope of their nation's outbreaks. The WHO's director general said he was especially concerned about this latest milestone since a lot of new cases are coming from poorer nations that aren't totally equipped to handle a widespread outbreak. He said nearly two-thirds of new cases come from just four countries, but didn't specify which ones. We do know the U.S. is the worst affected country at this point, at least when it comes to the reported death toll, since more than 93,000 people have died from COVID-19 here. And some new hotspots in the U.S. are cropping up each day. The Washington Post reports cases have been spiking recently in parts of Texas, Oklahoma, Iowa, and Nebraska. And just yesterday, the Post spoke to the nation's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, who said he has, quote, no doubt there will be a new wave of cases soon. Policy Lab researchers at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia developed a model to predict what the next month will look like. It shows a big surge coming for the Southeast, where states are densely populated and reopening quickly. The Policy Lab model shows new clusters most possible in South Florida and Alabama. That said, these surges are still preventable. Experts say at this point it's all about how people behave. Their advice? Even with restrictions lifted, keep it up with social distancing and hand washing. Then the second waves might not be so bad. Well, it seems we don't need to worry quite as much about wiping down groceries or disinfecting packages. The CDC updated its website to say COVID-19 does not spread easily on surfaces after all. That's a change from earlier when it said contaminated surfaces may be a source of concern. Fox News says the CDC updated its guidance because a preliminary study was disproven. Back in March, that research showed the virus could live on surfaces for up to 3 days, which was concerning for scientists. But at the time, the study had not been peer-reviewed, and it did not include any information about whether surfaces contained enough of the virus to actually infect humans. Now, surfaces or objects are listed under a section of the CDC site that names ways the virus does not easily spread. Still, experts say it's not impossible, especially if you're in the habit of touching things and then touching your face. So it's still smart to be mindful. Experts say the main way people are exposed and infected is through close person-to-person contact. The CDC says the longer you're around an infected person, the more likely you are to get COVID-19 yourself. That's why they still say social distancing is key. President Trump lashed out against Michigan and Nevada for their plans to expand voting by mail. The state's governors announced they're offering more voting options since the coronavirus pandemic has made in-person elections more of a challenge and there are concerns about safety. But the president does not like this idea. He's said many times mail-in voting can lead to fraud and fake ballots. It's worth noting, though, he did not cite anything specific that's happening, and Reuters points to past studies that found little evidence connecting absentee voting and voter fraud. Either way, Trump threatened on Twitter to withhold federal funding to Michigan and Nevada. He later backed off that idea, but still doubled down on the possibility of fraud. At this point, it seems the states are still moving forward with their plans. Nevada's June primaries are set to be an all-mail election, and Michigan's August primaries will be split, with everyone getting the option to vote absentee if they want. Michigan is dealing with flooding that's so severe it's being called a 500-year event. And yes, it's happening during a once-every-100-years pandemic. Remember, two river dams broke in central Michigan Tuesday night, about 140 miles northwest of Detroit. Well, river levels have since risen to record highs and sent feet of water rushing into neighborhoods. About 10,000 people had to evacuate their homes around the city of Midland. But amazingly, no reports that anyone was hurt or killed. The National Weather Service says the river likely will not get any higher than this. Still, the Midland Daily News says it will take several days for the water to recede enough for evacuees to go home, and at this point, it's not clear yet exactly what they'll be going home to. By the way, Michigan's governor has promised the state will investigate the dam's operators. CNN found documents showing federal regulators have been warning the companies for years about these dams. A powerful cyclone tore into India and Bangladesh, prompting nearly 3 million people to evacuate. Ultimately, at least 24 people died and thousands of homes were destroyed. The storm made landfall yesterday with 100-mile-an-hour winds and drenching rains. As of this morning, the storm has weakened, so recovery efforts are about to begin. The highly anticipated contact tracing technology from Google and Apple is now available around the world. The two tech giants, who are usually competitors, came together to create new COVID-19 tracking software. We've known about this for a few weeks, but it just became available for public health agencies to start using this tech in order to create their own contact tracing apps. Remember, contact tracing is all about identifying people who have been infected with COVID-19 and then alerting all the people who may have been exposed to them. The main way to do this is with actual humans, but experts hope this new technology can help too. With the update, a smartphone's Bluetooth will keep a log of all other phones it's been around with the same technology. Then, if someone gets sick, an anonymous alert can give people a heads up. To be clear, Apple and Google are not using this technology themselves. Instead, it'll be used by government health agencies for their apps. You will have to opt in if you want it on your phone. It won't automatically work. Still, there are privacy concerns. So we're talking about this in today's Thing to Know Thursday interview. Our expert breaks down the main pros and cons of downloading one of these apps. That's coming up in just minutes right after the main news. Before we get to more news, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsor, Netgear. Some home Wi-Fi can struggle to keep up with all the streaming, gaming, video conferencing, and homeschooling happening right now, especially if it's all at once. If this sounds familiar, it sounds like it's time for a Wi-Fi upgrade. Bring your Wi-Fi up to speed with Orbi Wi-Fi 6 from Netgear. Wi-Fi 6 is a whole new kind of Wi-Fi. It's the latest tech that gives you the fastest speeds possible even as you connect more and more devices throughout your home. And that means you'll be able to stream without buffering, eliminate lag while gaming, and connect more devices to your Wi-Fi than ever before. It's like upgrading your Wi-Fi to first class. If you are ready for the best Wi-Fi ever, you can get it today from Netgear and never worry about Wi-Fi again. Check out Orbi Wi-Fi 6 at netgear.com/best Wi-Fi. That's netgear.com/best Wi-Fi. Now, back to the news. From blocking off seats to disinfecting planes, U.S. airlines are stepping up safety measures. For example, Delta and JetBlue announced this week they'll start capping the number of passengers on their planes. Delta says it will only fill its planes to 60% capacity and avoid filling middle seats. JetBlue will also block off middle seats in an effort to keep people farther apart. Meanwhile, United Airlines announced a partnership with Clorox. That should help equip crews with tons of Clorox products. It also introduced sneeze guards and touchless kiosks for check-in. Remember, major airlines have also started requiring passengers wear face coverings. And one, Frontier Airlines, is even checking passengers for fevers. They're all hoping to make passengers feel safe enough to start traveling more this summer. Victoria's Secret stores are the latest to crumble in the coronavirus pandemic. Forbes reports the retailer is permanently closing about 250 of its locations in the U.S. and Canada since sales have been slow. Bath & Body Works, which is owned by the same parent company, is also closing 50 locations. It hasn't been the best week for Ford either. The automaker did reopen assembly plants on Monday, then had to shut some of them down just 2 days later. The reason? Well, the Wall Street Journal reports a few employees tested positive for COVID-19, so a plant in Michigan and another in Chicago had to close for deep cleaning. Those factories have since reopened. Also of note, President Trump will actually be in Michigan today touring a Ford factory, but not the one that was forced to close. And we'll see. This might be the first time the president appears in public wearing a face mask. Ford's spokesman told ABC News the company does have a strict mask policy that has been shared with the White House. It's being called a baby bust. Fewer Americans are deciding to have kids, and last year the birth rate was the lowest it's been in 35 years. The CDC reports 3.7 million children were born in the U.S. in 2019. That's down 1% from the year before. That might not sound like a big drop, but this downward trend has been going on for more than a decade now. It basically started when the 2008 recession hit and never picked back up. Experts say anxiety and uncertainty about the future is likely behind this new American trend. And they think even fewer people will decide to get pregnant during this pandemic, so the 2020 birth rate is expected to be even lower. Today is Red Nose Day. If you're not familiar, it's an annual charity event that raises money to end child poverty. To take part, NBC is holding a Red Nose Day special tonight with a bunch of celebrities, musicians, and comedians like Julia Roberts, John Legend, and Sarah Silverman. If you want to watch, it airs tonight at 9 Eastern. And that's it for the main news today, but now it's time for Thing to Know Thursday, where a different expert explains a different thing to know only on Thursdays after the news. And this week is part one of a two-part series on contact tracing. We want to make sure you fully understand what's going on with COVID tracing tech here in the U.S. and around the world, especially because, as we mentioned earlier in the show, Apple and Google just launched their new tracking software that could end up on your smartphone. So here to tell us about how it works and the pros and cons we should all be aware of is a journalist for MIT Technology Review who's been reporting about this for weeks. His name is Patrick Howell O'Neill. Here's our conversation. Hi, Patrick. Thanks so much for coming on The Newsworthy.
Thanks for having me.
So first, can you give the average person a basic understanding about how the planned app from Google and Apple will work? For example, it uses Bluetooth, right?
That's right. So, well, the first thing to understand is it's not an app in and of itself. Google and Apple are building technology into the Android and iOS operating systems and then allowing the government health departments around the world to build apps on top of that. And what that does is, first of all, it gives each government and each public health authority their own, the ability to build what they need to do. And it also makes it interoperable, right? Google and Apple together account for 99% of smartphones. And so it just magnifies the, usefulness of this technology. The way it works, basically, is it uses Bluetooth, which will be able to ping and figure out if your smartphone is near another smartphone. And the idea behind that is if you are coming into contact with someone who has tested positive for COVID-19, you will be able to find out, you'll be able to get instructions from your local public health authority, and you'll be able to follow those instructions. And the public health authority will be able to use that data to trace the infections and overall, in a larger effort, kind of stop the infection chain.
And just to be clear, this is voluntary, right? When you download the operating system, the latest operating system on your phone, you'll have to opt in to take part in this.
So the Google and Apple effort and everything that is using that technology is voluntary. However, it's important to note that there are lots of other technologies out there that countries are building and even have put out and are using. And some of them aren't voluntary. But the Google and Apple technology, they have a rule where if you're going to use it, you must have the consent of the user. If a government is going to use it, they must have consent of the user. So that's voluntary.
And that could be good and bad, right? It's good because you have control over what's being tracked, but it could potentially be bad for the effectiveness of the app. What are you hearing when it comes to that?
That's right. A big part of this is, will people download it? So these apps need people to download so that they're effective in terms of, will I know that there are enough people around me with the app, and then I'll be able to have that data to say I was infected or I was exposed versus I wasn't. If only one person in a group of 100 has this app, it's useless. It's also a matter of trust, right? We're in a moment of kind of techlash, they call it, right? Where people don't really trust what Apple and Google and the tech giants are doing. And even government institutions suffer from a deficit of trust. And so there's some questions about whether or not they would download something, people would download something like this. And I don't think there's a clear answer about that, about whether or not this will be effective. Again, something that we are kind of seeing an experiment unfolding live before us.
So what are some of the benefits? Why would someone consider downloading it?
Contact tracing in general, which is broadly speaking, just the idea of finding out where the contact and infections come from, is a long proven method that epidemiologists use in disease outbreaks. So it's been used in Ebola, in AIDS for a long time. It's scientifically proven to work. How it typically works is manual contact tracing. Someone calls you or comes to you and says, where have you been? Who have you been in contact with? And that's still the most important way. But what's happening this pandemic is that apps and other technology are being used to complement that manual tracing, automate and scale some of the efforts. It is important to, in terms of scale and automate, it is important to download these apps because it does make that contact tracing effort more effective. However, on the other hand, it's important for the public health authorities and countries and entities building these apps to do so in a transparent way, to collect as little data as possible, and to, you know, do so in a way that respects privacy and doesn't enable surveillance outside of necessary minimal medical surveillance.
You mentioned being able to scale, and that makes a ton of sense. And one of the other concerns about the human contact tracing is it relies on people's memories. Where have you been in the last 3 to 4 days or whatever the time period is since they may have been exposed, and trying to remember all the people they may have come in contact with. So this is a way to not rely just on people's memories, right?
That's right. It's interesting. I've talked to epidemiologists who were trained and have experience in contact tracing, quote unquote, old fashioned contact tracing. They all talked about how, in addition to memory, like, not everyone's truthful about where you were when you told your significant other you were at, you know, work or whatever. There's some things like that that can lead to, you know, misleading or just lying statements. And this is potentially a way to kind of circumvent that or fact check that, depending on how these things are built. So it's useful in that way. But again, it hasn't been proven out.
And what are some of the biggest privacy concerns? What could go wrong?
So that is a great question. I think that depends very much on the country, the technology, and, you know, the laws and the officials. In China, there's no transparency about what's going on with the contact tracing app. It's mandatory. They're tracking all sorts of things, including your location and other data. But in the U.S. and in countries where they're using Google and Apple's system, it's built privacy first, and it's built in a decentralized way. The questions there are kind of what happens with the data once a public health authority has data. Is there strong policies to protect it from being used for purposes outside of fighting the pandemic? Is the data going to be deleted in a reasonable manner that respects privacy? Because there's no reason this data needs to last beyond the pandemic. And these are questions that are being answered differently by different countries. I mean, Turkey, for example, sends the data straight to the police. If you're infected positive and you go outside of your home, the police are notified. That's not something that happens with the Apple and Google technology. And they've actually put together a list of requirements that the public health authorities have to follow to make sure that they can use this, including privacy requirements. But again, it's unfolding, and the Apple and Google technology isn't even released yet. So it remains to be seen how well that's enforced and what it means in reality.
Yeah, it's something we'll definitely be watching. And just to be clear, people can't just claim they tested positive and start causing fear to everyone that they talked with recently. You have to actually put in your test results, right?
Right. So again, this varies based on the country and the technology, but the good technology here is making sure that these infections are verified by a medical professional, which then kickstarts the process of contact tracing.
Anything you want to add or just a final takeaway for the audience?
I think these technologies are really important, and it's positive that people are experimenting with this. I think epidemiologists are generally pretty interested in this, and I think that their opinion as the actual scientists who study pandemics matters the most in a situation like this. But it's important to note that the most important contact tracing efforts are manual. Governments are going to have to put money, expertise, and other resources into actually hiring and training human beings to call and keep track of this disease in order to make sure the spread slows and eventually stops.
And that manual contact tracing with thousands of humans doing the work is exactly what we'll be talking about in next week's Thing to Know Thursday. We'll explain how it works, what it takes, and what you can expect if one of the tracers calls you. For now, you can read more about any of the news stories mentioned in this episode at thenewsworthy.com. Just look under the episodes tab. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to subscribe and share if you found this episode helpful, or leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you like to listen. The Newsworthy is here for you by 4 a.m. every weekday. We'll be back tomorrow with the news you need to know for Friday and the weekend. Until then, have a great day.